This is a podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. In On Country this morning, we're going to visit the area that is now home to Australia's largest city, and it was the first place in Australia to be colonised by white settlers in 1788. But there was a long and rich Indigenous history prior to the arrival of Captain Phillip. We're talking about the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. And this morning, Nathan Moran, who's the CEO of the Metropolitan Local Aboriginal Land Council in Redfern in Sydney, will be our guest. And Nathan, we welcome you to On Country and to Overnights this morning. And it's a great pleasure to have you with us. Good morning.
Juri Gambarua.
And tell me what that means.
Simply means g'day in the local Gadigal language.
Tell me about the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Tell me, where did their land encompass? How far did it extend?
Well, certainly the first thing is to point out the word Eora. It's a euphemism, a collective word provided by Paddy Garang. Paddy Garang being the first Gadigal, if not the first First Nations Australian, to share language in this country. And that was with Lieutenant Dawes, of course. That's where the word Eora appeared. And it's in reference to Dawes asking questions to Paddy Garang about who were her neighbours or the surrounding people of her Gadigal people. So you can picture a conversation under the what is now the bridge, or was then Dara, today's Dawes Point, a conversation where Dawes is asking, who are they on the other side? Who are they out to the west? And she gives the word Eora, meaning the people or the collective. And we just have to confer that it is always an issue in trying to translate the oldest language on earth into the newest language, on making that a 100% nuance for everyone. So paramountly explaining a word for collective peoples of what we call Sydney today or the Great Harbour, those surrounding it, the word is Eora.
How much interest was there from those first white settlers in the people who lived in the area we now know as Sydney?
I personally say, as a personal observation, and certainly as the CEO of the local land council for now 6 years, as the son of a woman who was in the first culture and heritage unit of National Parks and Wildlife in New South Wales, my mother is Wilma Moran, I have been exposed to and been able to look back through the history notes of the colony. And it's quite sad to point out at the first contact between 1788 up to 1790 and just little before that, there appears only one person, and his name is Lieutenant Dawes, who shows empathy, sympathy, or any greater respect for our people.
Terrible. So tell me about the Gadigal people. Who were the Gadigal people?
Well, they are the people that we commonly would refer to in today's language, those around Circular Quay, those around the Domain, those whose country extends out to the ocean, following the southern banks of the harbour as it is today, extending down to what is known as Gamay to us, or today Botany Bay. So the southern people of the harbour, whose area extends down and meets with the Gaywiggle, who are the people on the other side of Gamay or Botany Bay. They meet up with the Bidjigal in and around what we call Cook's River today, or Woolai, as it was called in the old days. So They're their nearest neighbours, and Gadigal are certainly the people in the west that go out and meet up with Wongal country in and around thereabouts Petersham or Lewisham.
And what about north of the harbour?
Directly opposite the Gadigal are the Gamarigal or Gamaragal people. And more famously today, we have Barangaroo being returned to the public narrative as a great example of a Gamarigal or Gamaragal woman.
So the Gamarigal is now kind of called Camaray, and beyond that Guringai, which is Kuringai, and that's in the north as well. How do you feel about the way that those names have been changed? Is it just that there was no permanent spelling or maybe pronunciation at that time, or has that just been anglicised?
Well, I must stop and confer that my personal upbringing is I'm a Biripi and Thungadi person, and my people are the areas of mother born in Kempsey, grandparents extending down to Taree, and say our understanding of how we were observed and recorded in the first instance was, my pop would say, they were eavesdroppers. They were people who were not actually engaging with us. They were observing us, recording us, but never conferring with us what was written down or recorded. So there's a lot of misinterpretation in those first diaries, because the majority of it is not an interaction, it's an observation. So just putting that down, that we discount a lot of information recorded about us because it's not done with us.
Right, fair enough.
So that's the first point. And that's why we cherish doors. We cherish someone who sits down and allows us to speak rather than someone else writing about us. And that brings me to the point about language. You know, we can call it yarn carding or Chinese whispers or eavesdropping, where you get it a little bit wrong. And Gamarigal's a great example, being called Camaray or Camaragal with a K and a C rather than the G. But that's a common interpretation of different language that we see across New South Wales, the southeast, for us Gurries, Kurries and Murrays, where our K's are being forced on us when we do use G's. We don't use C's. We don't use K's. We pronounce it with G. But unfortunately, that's part of the interpretation of others.
So do you consider yourself to be a Gadigal man, even though you're people and you came from much farther north? Or how does somebody become a member of a particular nation or tribe or country? Is it merely by living there? Do their ancestors, do their family have to come from that same area as well?
Great question. I confer to you there's a lot of depth in this one. So as a connection point, everyone who's born somewhere has what we know is a birthright. They're connected to the area or associated to the area where they come into the world. But in terms of a traditional sense of speaking as a custodian or a traditional owner, as it's now coined, rather than custodian of an area, to speak for that country, you're descended from those direct people who are the continuum of that area. Now, in today, in 2020, that's very hard to do in urbanised central areas, certainly bounded by Newcastle to Wollongong surrounding Sydney, where dislocation, dispossession and movement of our people shows there's very few people remain on the land today that their ancestors back to the point of contact were on. So there's a bit of a difference, but we encourage everyone to learn more about their historical connections and their contemporary connections. That is, where are they born? Where do they belong? And we believe people are much better off in having that understanding, become more grounded human beings and connected people.
In those pre-colonial times, how is the harbour, the Great Harbour as you called it, Sydney Harbour as we call it now, how was that used? And was there much travel backwards and forwards in maybe the area where the Harbour Bridge is, which is kind of the closest point between the north and the south shores there? How much of that was done and what was the harbour used for? Was it obviously for food, that's one thing, but what about for just ordinary recreation and having fun, that sort of thing?
I'm glad to have this conversation. So the centre of the world for the Eora, the collective Gals as we call them, anyone ending in Gal, whether they're the Eel clan, the Burramadigal, the Wallamadigal, those who chase snapper, whether it's the Gamarigal, the Gadigal or the Wongal, their commonality was a creation story based on how the harbour was made. And that's what's known by us as Burrabirra, something that we hope can be renewed and regenerated in the knowledge of the history of this land, and particularly what we call Sydney today as a story of a great eel carving out the waterways, which is today's Sydney Harbour, Lane Cove rivers, Parramatta rivers, all the associated tributaries. And the commonality of that great creation story is something that shares their affinity with the area. But more importantly, it's centred and remains at the centre of our culture is what's known as Mimal or Goat Island. It's ironic that it's only a stone throw from the bridge, but it's actually the grand centre of Sydney. It is the geographical centre of Sydney. It aligns with Gamarigal, Wongals, Gadigals to be the very centre of their shared area. And there's a great history that's recorded in the colony of our people enjoying serenity, nirvana, or whatever words we'd like to call it, utopia, on this place called Mimal to us, or Goat Island. And unfortunately, in 1836, the colony needed somewhere to store its weaponry and ammunition from the convicts who were potentially going to overthrow the colony, so they displaced us from that shared space. And what a great example of an ultimate barbecue area, a place where recreation, you know, we talk about people wanting to be in contact with environment today, and that's an area that every one of the collective peoples of Sydney shared as a common space. and quite beautifully recorded by Bennelong when asked by the colonial people what it meant to him. He says, "That's my place given to me by my father."
Was there much interaction between all the peoples that you've talked about on either side of the harbour or out west as well? Did they gather together for celebrations? Was there a common language that could be used as well?
So, yeah, I appreciate the depth of time we can give to this subject because it needs it, and that is there was collectively ongoing in-depth interaction between all the collective peoples that we now call Eora, or the gals, so to speak, as we euphemism. The gals got together for ceremonies, be they for marriages, be it for initiations, be it for conflict, be it for recreation, you name it. There was continual interaction between the groups. There was commonality of what we call language. Now, this is in the context of language, trying to put it into a European context. It's akin to the Spaniard, the Frenchman, the Italian, and the German coming together. When they meet together, they use what's called Latin. And for us, it's just a mother tongue. And certainly, we are part of greater cultural groups where we speak language at home, we speak language with our direct neighbours, and then our associated neighbours. And when we talk to our extended neighbours, we talk in what's known as mother tongue. So certainly, you have commonalities of language where the people of Sydney were the border keepers of the Dharawal, the great language speakers of the south of the Georges River. And certainly then going north of the Hawkesbury, getting into Goori country, you would come across, you know, proverbially Guringai. Now, that's not the Guringai at Keringai, that's the Guringai on the Hunter Valley area. That's the sort of pointed difference in reapplying or misapplying people to an area where they mix the cultural context.
Nathan Moran is our guest, CEO of the Metropolitan Local Aboriginal Land Council at Redfern, in On Country this morning. Tell me then also, though, about the Eora Nation and the people of it, Gadigal people and the other gals as you talk about them. Were they a maritime people as well, not only going backwards and forwards perhaps across the harbour, but even outside the heads or even within the harbour? Did they build substantial vessels that they would travel around in and then go up and down the Parramatta River as well?
What an awesome history the people have. Certainly should be more acknowledged for their maritime skills. These people have yet to have their full recognition, or certainly I believe they haven't had full recognition of their mastery of the oceans, the waterways. There was certainly just as dense a use of the harbour as there is now in 2020 as what there was in 1788. A particular note is the mastery of our women in terms of operating smaller nawis rather than the large nawis. So the word for our boat, vessel or canoe is nawi of this area. There's many depictions of our women fishing in nawis, but there's also depictions of much larger nawis where men would travel across to perform or provide cultural representations or performance. The mastery of our people on the water, I don't believe, has been fully acknowledged. But, you know, what can you do than start going through the actual records of the colony to look at drawings and etchings showing blackfellas on tiny little proverbial ski craft you'd call a canoe today, fishing, eating fish at the same time, and some of our women also transporting their babies. Amazing mastery and wizardry of the water.
Let's go back a long way before 1788, though. How many people do you think were living in this area that we know now is Sydney, and how long had they been here? And we know there's such a huge and rich history, Indigenous history in Australia, that may go back 100,000 years or more. How long, how many years do you think, do we know they were living in the area we now call Sydney?
I will only speak from my stomach here, that is my spirit that I was born into and certainly advised and raised with, and that is my grandmother, as a preeminent cultural teacher, spoke about, we've been here since the world was created. Our stories, certainly dreamtime stories or creation stories, attest that we've seen many, many ice ages. But we also have stories of when the sky lifted and light first shined down, and having very large, oversized animals that some would call very extinct animals today. To say to you that the stories I was passed from my grandmother is, we are from here, and certainly my grandfather attested in his own practical sense, he believes the world went mad in forgetting it was once one island that broke up. It simply broke up. It then became more commonly known that we've been part of what is Gondwana land. He just could not understand why people couldn't get back a step further to realise it was once one great continent, then broke up by the various rises and falls of seas that's created the archipelagos or the landscape we have today, where we're all broken up as independent continents. And we just happened to remain on our bit of Earth that drifted off to where we are today.
These days, Sydney is a huge metropolis, but there are places you can see the history of the Gadigal people, even still within the city of Sydney. Can you give us any examples of that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just in recent times of archaeological work, and now that we have laws post the 70s and into the 80s that allows us to be part of developments to tell the history of an area, we've recovered, you know, the first evidence of fish hooks. Certainly, there's always been a, I don't know if it's a laughing joke or a reality check, but satire in our mob to say we're the first fishermen of Earth. Right. And most recently, certainly, the uncovering and recovering of examples of what we call barra, or the fish hook, now becoming, you know, a preeminent proposed monument in Sydney, attest the wizardry of the local people, their use of the local resources. But in terms of history, I would suggest that the story of creating, you know, the riverways and the courses, the tributaries through Burrabirra, attests our connections back to this land is a bit more in depth than 100,000 years.
It's a remarkable story and it needs to be told. And if people want to find out more about it, are there tours or walking tours that they can be taken on, or guided tours as well, that if people think, well, I'm going to Sydney or I live in Sydney and I want to know more about it, what can they do?
And contact Metropolitan Local Land Council. We're very lucky to have a website and certainly even a Facebook page these days to allow people to engage with us and send us through queries, questions or requests on how we can help them. But I would acknowledge that I'm part of a network of 120 local land councils, so I don't want to step on the toes of my eastern brothers and sisters known as Laparoos, the western brothers and sisters called Daruban, the southwest called Gandangara, because we are part of a greater network where we can connect people to the backyard and whatever suburb they're in Sydney to engage with the local Aboriginal community.
These days, Sydney is named after a British lord who never set foot on our land. Was there a name given to this area by the people that lived here? What did they call it?
Well, each individual clan slash family groups, as we attest and starting with acknowledging the Gadigal, had names and place names for everything. Everything had a name. So it's very hard when we talk about Sydney. You know, it's such a broad, double-punned meaning. We can give the word for circular quay. We know that. That's Warrana. Warrana will always be the name of the area, now called Circular Quay. As I tested earlier about Dawes Point, that's always known as Dara. It'll always be Dara to our people. But they have other names that are placed over them. But we're also proud to acknowledge, you know, the Kirribillis, the Willoughbys, these places, names, Bondi, as a great insight into the history of an area where you can connect to the actual, factual, real culture.
How important is it that those names still exist after all these years? And how important would it be to you that they actually were maybe changed back to more accurately reflect the people who live there or what those people call those places?
Oh, very dear to our heart at the moment is working with local governments. Certainly in mine, I have 23 local governments. We're encouraging to look at a minimum dual naming, if not returning cultural naming. And I'm so proud to say there's a number of local councils and communities who are working with us to see cultural naming returned, be it a dual naming, you know, or actual returning of cultural names. So, you know, you've got property New South Wales, we've got transport New South Wales, we've got such a number, the Department of Education, who are working actively with our community as we speak to try and renew, return language. And so proud to do that. But at the same time, acknowledging to people, you know, it'll take time. It always should never be rushed. We should consider that these things shouldn't be looked at a short-term time frame in a project. It should be a commencement of a conversation with the local community to try and understand what directions and goals there are from either party. And if it's their local language, they're already aligned and we can share the local language as we have it.
Nathan, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us this morning and thank you so much for telling us about the Eora Nation.
Oh, thank you very dearly for the opportunity, and I wish everyone a deadly reconciliation week. It kicked off with the anniversary of our release of the inquiry into the Stolen Generations. We'll finish off with Mabo Day on the 3rd of June, and hope everyone gets a chance to engage throughout the next week.
And that was Nathan Moran, CEO of the Metropolitan Local Aboriginal Land Council in Redfern, in the city we now know as Sydney. But this morning in On Country, we've heard the story of the Gadigal and other peoples of the Eora Nation. And that was another podcast from ABC Radio Overnights. I'm Rod Quinn. Thanks for listening.